Around here, fall plots usually go into the ground around the beginning of September, which means right now is when decisions get made. And Whitetail Hill is who I would call before making those decisions. Like, literally call them. That's one thing that we love about working with Whitetail Hill is you can get a real person on the phone by call or text who will look at your situation, your soil, your shade, your goals, and tell you exactly which blend to plant and how to plant it. If it's the first plot you've ever put in, they'll walk you through the whole thing before and after the sale. And the seed they'll set you up with is good stuff. It's premium germination tested blends with zero filler. And their seed blends are built in Alabama, so you know it's going to handle southern conditions. So don't guess your way through another planting season. Go to whitetailhill.com/southern and use the code Southern for 10% off. And if you're not sure what to plant, ask them. Again, that's whitetailhill.com/southern and use that code Southern for 10% off. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. Is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo lets you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code SOUTHERN10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
It is virtually impossible to kill a mature buck out of a permanent stand outside of the rut.
This is exactly what a hot take is. It gets some people fired up, some people agree with you. Mm-hmm. It's not all one way or the other. I think for a lot of guys in the Southeast, your average deer hunter, I would say that's probably pretty accurate. But we have met individuals, specifically permanent sets, that includes a shooting house or a blind.
Yep.
That are strategically placed on a food plot. I know guys that have tons of success killing bucks outside the rut on food plots with a rifle.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Thursday Q&A Hot Take edition of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Going to be taking questions and hot takes from our circle group again and a couple emails. We'll talk more about the emails in a minute because the way that you submit questions over there is a little different now. Jacob, how are you doing?
Doing great. Listen, guys, we are 1 week close to the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Very excited about it. If you haven't got your tickets yet, pick them up and come hang out with us and a bunch of past podcast guests and learn a lot about deer hunting and check out some new equipment as well if you're trying to bridge the gap, maybe getting into saddle hunting, mobile lock-on, or even trying to expand climber using a climbing tree stand, different opportunities there. But yeah, coming up August 14th through the 16th, Dalton, Georgia, at the Dalton Convention Center?
Yep.
Civic Center?
Dalton Convention Center.
Yeah. So anyway, super excited about that. By the way, Circle's been blowing up recently.
Yeah.
Been awesome. A bunch of new members have joined. A bunch of new members hopped on for their very first hunter hangout meeting that we did last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
We rotate between Tuesdays and Wednesdays every other week. So this past week, this come out Thursday. We had it on Tuesday this week. And next week, I believe it's going to be on Wednesday. But it's been awesome seeing some of these new guys hopping on, you know, bring up some new interesting questions, different posts, but also being active on the Hunters Hangout meetings and get a little spin, you know, 2-3 hours with us once a week. It's pretty fun. So appreciate everybody that's joined the Circle community over the last 10 days. And if you're interested in joining Circle and you hear us talking about it, and that's where a lot of these questions are coming from and hot takes, there's a link down in the description of this podcast, whether it's the audio feed or the video feed. There's a link down below. If you click it, it'll open it up and you can come and hang out with us and drop some comments, drop some posts, and join us for these Hunters Hangouts. So, how do we want to kick it off?
All right, let's get into it. We're going to get right into the middle of the weeds here. Thomas Fletcher had a great hot take that really got everyone going on here. Thomas Fletcher said, hot take, it is virtually impossible to kill a mature buck out of a permanent stand outside of the rut. What do you think?
Listen, I told him, let me give a little feedback, because we had a ton of comments under this. And a lot of people were like, some were agreeing, some were disagreeing. And I comment below, I'm like, Thomas, this is exactly what a hot take is. It gets some people fired up, some people agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all one way or the other. Because if you have a hot take, but everybody's in agreement of it, it's really not that hot of a take then.
Yeah.
Like, hot takes, you know, it kind of adds a little friction, better for worse, but it makes for interesting conversations. And this definitely did it. That is an interesting hot take. Very interesting. I comment and told him this because I think for a lot of guys in the Southeast, your average deer hunter, I would say that's probably pretty accurate. But we have met individuals, specifically permanent sets that includes a shooting house or a blind.
Yep.
That are strategically placed on a food plot. I know guys that have tons of success killing bucks outside the rut on food plots with a rifle. Maybe not necessarily with a bow, mostly with a rifle, outside the rut. That's one of the only circumstances I could really kind of think of per se. It's like maybe, you know, have an opportunity if you have your stuff set up correctly outside the rut. But for the average guy, I would say that's probably fairly true. I know, like, just with my personal upbringing and, like, family farm, my uncle, not many... mature bucks ever got killed outside of the rut from one of those pre-hung sets, which the whole place was pre-hung sets. We had a couple climbers, but didn't implement them a whole bunch. But pretty much if we killed a mature buck or there's a mature buck that killed on that property, it was during the rut from one of those pre-hung sets, permanent, you know, setups, and nothing outside of that. So so my understanding, that's pretty true. But then again, when we're hunting public land, we don't have any pre-hung sets anywhere. So it's like, you know, if we get an opportunity to kill one, it's always in a lock-on or in a saddle setup. So I don't know. It was interesting because, again, there was guys that were fired up that were like, yes, I agree, and quite a few that were like, no. But then as they kind of elaborated a little bit more on their questions and kind of thought a little bit more, they're like, well, most of them have come around, like, maybe pre-rut or post, you know, just kind of like either side of the rut. So whether that deer was still out cruising or, you know, covering some ground or not, to be determined. But
yeah, I think I kind of agree with what you said. I think for a lot of guys, that's maybe true, but I don't think saying it's virtually impossible is a bit of an overstatement, because the caveat to it is you've got to like really know what you're doing, and you've got to really understand how the bucks are using your property and moving around. And also, I think it has a lot to do with just how your property sets up too.
Yeah.
Like if you got a bunch of destination food sources on your place,
mm-hmm.
like if you've got agriculture around you, or if you've got really nice food plots or whatever the case
may be. Or you could be running bait.
Yeah, or a lot of bait stations that you're keeping well-managed and you're keeping the pressure off. I think it is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, like I said, you got to really know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You can't just go like hang a set out in the woods and expect to kill a big buck.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I say for like the average guy, I would say it's not quite impossible, but it's very unlikely.
Yeah. I think the reason for that, though, too, is typically people put their pre-hung sets on travel corridors, so it's set up for rut hunting areas, or food source.
I haven't met very many people that hang a pre-hung set that's not, or like hang a set that they're going to leave all season that's not a rut set.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen that often. There are people, I don't say it doesn't happen.
Outside of food plots and stuff.
Yeah, outside of food plots. But even a lot of food plot stuff is like, yeah, I'll hunt a little bit before the rut, but most of the time, you know, they're hunting the rut. The average deer hunter hunts during the rut.
Okay? Yeah.
Majority of their time. And then, you know, kind of falls off, you know, after that.
Well, that's why I say you got to have a really solid food source, because if you're just hunting natural feed, like oak trees dropping or whatever the case may be, that changes so much week to week that it's hard to have a permanent stand in a spot where you know that they're going to be coming by it, or they're going to be coming by it consistently. Like when I put my cameras out in the woods on scrapes and trails and stuff, it's never very consistent. That's kind of the caveat to everything when it comes to putting when I tell people about putting a camera on a licking branch in the summer for buck inventory, which I think that's a question that's going to be coming up here in a little bit. It's not like you're going to get those deer like every single day on camera. Most of the time you don't. Usually you get them a couple times a month on camera.
Mm-hmm.
So putting a permanent stand on that is like, I don't know. I don't know how well that's going to do.
Yeah,
like
it's
you got to be really lucky for it to work out.
Yeah.
Or you have to have something really dialed where you've got defined bedding and defined food, and you've got a really good pattern on those deer.
Yeah. When I think of guys who have talked about killing deer, killing bucks, mature bucks outside the rut, consistently, and if I throw in the card of from a permanent set, it's always on a food plot.
Yeah,
it's on a food plot, and they just hunt it in a strategic way where they can get in and out clean, and they're not pressuring the plot, and they just have a lot of success that way, as long as the plot is close to, and this goes back to the episode we did with Caleb Huckabuff from Whitetail Hill, food plot location matters.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do that and have it set up where, like, hey, I kill one out here early season, or I kill one out here late season, post-rut, depending on when your rut is, it's going to be close enough to that quality bedding cover that a mature buck's going to be using for the time of the year that you think you can actually kill one in that location.
Yep.
That's a huge aspect of it, too. Just because you have a really good food plot, you have a good entrance-exit route, doesn't mean it's close enough to bedding that you might even have an opportunity outside the rut. So it is very difficult. It is very different. There's a reason. If you really analyze our back catalog of over 800 episodes, a lot of what we talk about, especially with Southern guys and Southern hunters, is one version or another of rut hunting.
Yeah.
Because it is just the tried and true way just to be successful killing bucks. It doesn't necessarily always mature bucks, but like whatever floats your boat, if you're excited, you mm-hmm. want to kill your rack deer, it's the rut. And the rut's so diverse in the Southeast. It's not all a standard time because we have deer from, like, again, Alabama's got five, I think it's five distinct ruts in Alabama. Mississippi's close to that. Louisiana's in that same ballpark. Arkansas has multiple different ruts in different regions of the state. Georgia's like that. I think South Carolina's like that. You have just a variety of ruts. Florida's definitely like that. Very wide stretch of rutting activity from South Florida to the Panhandle mm-hmm. and everything in between. So, that's one reason why we talk so much about rut hunting on here. Sorry for all you guys that have a standard rut and you're in a state where there's no other time that deer rut other than that one time, at least the primary rut. Because down here in the Southeast, we have some flexibility on that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm trying to sit back and think about bucks that I don't think I've killed one from a permanent stand outside of the rut. And I'm trying to think of other people I know who have where I was like there for it. And I'm like, I'm drawing a blank. I really can't think of anything. There were spots that we had ground blinds growing up, like in boulder fields up on the mountain.
Yeah.
And occasionally they would bow hunt it, like Colton and his dad would bow hunt it before. But they were just kind of passing time before gun season.
But see, the emphasis here is mature buck.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely killed bucks, especially growing up, that were not mature bucks, but killed bucks from pre-hung sets outside of the rut, for sure, but not a mature deer.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I should have thought more about that. Because I really, other than hunting the farm and like that one, the hunt club last year, I haven't really hunted very many pre-hung, more of a permit stand location.
Well, going back to your point too about this, the people we've interviewed over the years, we try really hard to find early season guys who are consistent early season hunters in the South, and they are very hard to find. There's not many guys who get it done every year in the early season on mature bucks. On shooting does everything that's different, but on mature bucks, it's really, really hard to find guys who do it consistently early season. And I think it ties into this question well because, you know, we talk about how the South's so different from places like the Midwest because your bedding and your food just aren't well defined. It's all stirred up, mixed in together. Like they could really bed anywhere and they can feed almost anywhere too. Mm-hmm. So for you to put a permanent stand somewhere, you're like really hamstringing yourself because you got to be able to adapt to where the bucks are living at. Because, you know, they might be in this little draw, this little drainage system over here one day, but the next day they could be over here because it's got the exact same stuff in it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, thousands and thousands of acres of the same stuff. So they can be anywhere.
Yeah, it's just, to me, that is a hot take. And it's, and it got people riled up. And I'd love, again, for all these questions, whether it's a question or a hot take, which this is a hot take, not a question, love for people to leave comments, especially if you're watching on YouTube, leave comments down below on just your thoughts. And maybe some of these, like you actually have, you know, had success killing bucks, mature bucks outside the rut from a pre-hung, you know, permit, I say permit in quotes, stand location.
Yep.
So, and when I think about permit, just for clarification, like permit, I'd look at a lock-on that is consistently in that said tree, a ladder stand that's consistently always there, a shooting house, pop-up blind. It's something that's consistently always there. It's not like you kind of just move it around a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you could almost call, if you pre-hunt, if you scout a little piece of private land, and you've got a climber at the base of a tree, you almost could call it as a permanent stand location that if you truly have that stand there the whole season. You might not hunt for the whole season, but you just got it sitting there.
Yeah.
Or you got to go back up the tree, climb up the tree with it. So, yeah, that is so interesting. When he said that, it threw me off, but I was like, this is great. I like it.
Yeah. Well, y'all let us know what you think in the comments. Moving on. This is from Jonathan Sargent. He says, hunting from a lightweight mobile lock-on tree stand is more versatile than saddle hunting. With the tree stand, you don't have an offhand shot. The only way saddle hunting compares to this is if you one stick and rappel out. What do you think?
I don't know how the one stick and rappel out can. I don't understand how that's more.
I guess because it's more compact and lightweight.
But see, he was talking more so about shot opportunities.
Yeah.
This is what it sounded like, what he's talking about. Like,
yep.
From a shot opportunity standpoint, lock-on's a better setup
yeah.
for mobile hunting.
I see where he's coming from, but I don't really agree.
No, I don't.
I think it depends on your area, though.
Yeah.
Because when we've hunted places before where it kind of depends on how the trees are and what the trees are made up of. Because if you have real bushy trees with a bunch of limbs coming off, it's really hard to saddle hunt out of them.
Much, much better than being a little lock on.
Yeah.
Because especially if you're on public land, you can't cut anything. Because if you're in a bushy tree and you're in the saddle, you're facing the tree, and there's tons of limbs coming off, it makes it for very hard to get your bow even drawn back, unless you're shooting directly behind you. But that's where the little lock-on's super nice, because you can tuck it in there, and then you have all these branches kind of coming in around you from either direction, from both sides of you, and you still have a spot where you can shoot out of.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think, again, interesting. I wouldn't say the lock-on, again, every time is better than the straight saddle. I do like, and I've talked about this on the podcast, certain hunts, when we go to the Midwest, and learn this from our buddy Zach, after I had a mix-up in Kansas three years ago now, I guess, where I was just saddle hunting, just in the saddle.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Kansas was 2 years ago.
It was coming up our third deer season.
No, that would make it 2 years. Last November was 1 year. This November would be 2 years.
Last November, we were in Iowa.
Yes.
Year before that, we were in Kansas.
Yes.
Okay.
2 years.
I'm going to say 3 years, guys. So whatever. All right. 2 years, 3 years. It's all.
It's 2 years.
It doesn't matter.
November 2024, 2025, that's 1 year. 2026, that's 2 years. It's been a year and a half.
It's okay. We're going to round up. It's coming up on 3 years. Anyways, learns from our buddy Zach. He was talking about during the rut, because he likes saddle hunting, but during the rut, he likes having a small lock on. And you can lean like you would saddle hunting. And you can still sit comfortably in the saddle, but you also can sit on the platform. But you have the flexibility of a bigger platform where you can freestand. You can shoot the weak side. If you're a right-handed shooter, it's the right-hand side of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Easier with less movement and so on than if you're just saddle hunting. And that kind of came to bite me a little bit in Kansas, because I had a buck come running in directly on my weak side. Could not have been more my weak side. And I had to spin around and end up bumping a limb and all that kind of stuff. But I just had to make a lot of movement instead of just turning towards the deer and shooting them. So I have been implementing that when we travel a little bit out of state. I'll carry a lightweight lock on and my saddle platform. And depending on the setup and where we're going, I may take the saddle platform or may take the little lock on. But like when we were in Iowa last year, I mean, I used that little lock on pretty much every sit I used it. I don't think I used the saddle at all when we were in Iowa. And it works great. It works really good. It's kind of best of both worlds aspect of it. And when you're in the saddle, or when you're in the lock-on, you set your saddle up. You know, you're wearing your saddle, but you set it up almost like a safety harness.
Yep.
You know, if you go to sit down in the actual, on the seat of the lock-on, if you want to, you just kind of bring that bridge, that carabiner around, and cinch it up a little bit. So there's not just a absolute ton of slack, but you can loosen up real quick if you need to make a big move.
Yep.
But then you can lean around the tree, go around the platform of the stand, and it works great. So I'm not gonna say one's better than the other, but also the one thing about the just the straight lock on, because I did the straight lock on before I did saddle hunting.
Yeah,
I went from a climber to a Lone Wolf Alpha 2 lock on. It was original OG Lone Wolf sticks, and did that for 2 seasons or 3 seasons before going into saddle hunting, and I liked it a lot. The one thing that I enjoyed about the saddle hunting aspect was, especially on bigger trees, being behind the tree.
Yep.
And people are like, well, why do I want to be behind the tree? I'm like, you can actually use that. Even if you're a broad dude, you can use that tree a little bit to your advantage. If you, especially bow hunting, and you think the deer, like you have a pretty good idea of like the white oaks are in front of me and the clear cut thicket the deer are coming out of is on the other side of that, they're coming from that direction. They're not coming from this wide open creek bottom more times than not, hunting an afternoon spot or whatever. And you can use this cover to be able to kind of get your bow, get situated behind it, and be able to kind of ease out the side when the deer's feeding or whatever and get your shots.
Yeah.
And I really like that, but I've had experience with all of them. So I'm not just saying this just as a guy who has only saddle hunted. I've done it all and I still use it all.
Yeah. Same here. I did lock-ons before I did the saddle hunting. And Yeah, I don't know. If you hunt an area with really bushy trees that are difficult to get a shot out of with a saddle, then yeah, maybe a lock-on's better. I don't know if really one's better than the other. It just depends.
But it's all a tool.
Yeah, it's all a tool. And to your point, I like the hybrid hunting because I did that in Iowa last year for the first time, and I loved
it. When you forgot to when you remember to bring straps, you did it.
Oh yeah,
you gotta have straps to hang your platform or your tree stand.
Ended up hunting on the ground that first night, everybody. Oh. But yeah, no. I really like that, and especially for an all-day sit. Me and Caden sat for a couple days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's way
dude,
better.
It was way better because, I mean, it helped pass the time, one, because, you know, you'd stand up. I'd stand up and lean for a while in the saddle for maybe, I don't know, 2 hours or so, and then I'd turn around and I would sit in the chair for a little while, and then maybe sometimes you can, like, kind of sit on the chair and straddle the tree like that. That's really comfortable. You can take pressure off your
feet. Yeah, Zach taught me that. That's super nice.
Dude, it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. It's not something I would do all the time just because I don't want to carry all of it all the time. And also the other con to it is that's incredibly expensive. Like, if you're going to buy both setups.
You can use a cheap one.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, if you're talking about if he's bringing up a lightweight mobile lock-on, though, they're all pretty expensive.
You can listen. Thomas is still using an OG lock-on Windwalker that I bought for $110 from a garage sale. And that's how he hybrid hunts. And that's a tiny little lightweight lock-on. He's sitting in the chair and everything.
Someone needs to bring those back.
Yeah, you don't have to have one of the brand new, fanciest, super high-dollar lock-on. You can find some of that at work. It's just... Mm-hmm. Typically, what you're going to give up is truly how lightweight it is for the size of it and the functionality of said lock-on, said, you know, little hang-on.
Yeah,
stand.
How sleek it is, you know, just user-friendliness.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. They're both good tools, but I see where it's coming from.
Yep.
All right, moving on. This is from Addison Parker. Too many people are too tied up thinking about tactics and these quote-unquote good spots that all these consistent buck killers have, when 9 times out of 10, the biggest key to these guys being consistent is they hunt a lot.
Yes. Yes. I agree. That's accurate for most of the guys that we have on the show that are consistent at killing really good deer, mature bucks, is they have the time freedom to hunt more than the average guy. So that when we had Jordan Jones on the podcast a couple years ago, he was talking about there's like three factors that he said for like consistently killing big deer, and it was like money, time, and like a good wife or something.
Support,
like wife, family support, and all that stuff. He's like, if you got enough money, you can make it work. If you got enough time, you can make it work. If you have a supportive family, you can make it work as well.
Yep.
But if any combination of those three or all three of those, it's like the magic thing.
Yep.
And it's when you think about it, that's pretty true. Mm-hmm. Because time is probably the biggest issue for most people. If you had more time, you could really pick something apart and also be a little more choosy and really kind of work your way into an opportunity to be able, you know, shoot you a really nice deer. And that's what most people don't have, is the time. Like, yeah, money aspects might be true for a lot of people too, but that you gotta have time to go.
Yep.
You have to have time to go.
Yep.
So
well, and the time compounds, too, because it's not just that you have a lot of time to sit in a tree in the woods. That's definitely part of it, where the more hours you have on stand, the more likely you are to see what you're after. But also, the guys that have a lot of time, they just spend so much time in the woods that they hunt that they understand the woods, and they know how the deer use the woods, and they know all the little quirks and everything about, like, hey, I usually see deer on this trail, but I usually see the bucks on this other trail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they learn those things over time, just spend a lot of time out there. And I think that's also why the guys that we've talked to who are successful, who do have more limited time, they're typically the ones that are preaching you should scout more than you hunt.
Yeah.
And that's why that is, I think, is because if you do have limited time, you're way better off burning a lot of that time learning your woods, so that when you are spending time just sitting in one spot waiting for a deer, you know that you're in the best position possible based on what you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, how many guys, we talk to a lot of guys, especially when they're talking about traveling out of state, where if you've got a 7-day hunt, spend those first couple of days just walking and scouting.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done that on these last couple of trips, and it's worked out really well. We've had a lot of buck encounters. We've killed some bucks. Like, that's definitely a good strategy of wise use of your time. Like, you just got to learn the woods. So, so I think he's right, but I think there's a little bit of nuance to it there.
Yeah. I will just say, they hunt a lot.
You got a lot of time. I think of guys like Michael Perry said years ago on the podcast, he works a lot of overtime to be able to afford a lot of time off work. Now, he just retired, so he's all excited, okay?
Oh, yeah.
But he would take off for like 3 weeks in November in Alabama and hunt, you know, his part of the state hard for three-ish weeks, almost 4 weeks, and be very effective at, you know, tagging, you know, a couple really, really good deer every single year by doing that. But he would work a ton in the off season. You know, in the spring and summertime, working a ton of overtime, literally not having barely many days off to be able to afford to be able to take off that long from work to go and hunt. And your average guy is just not going to be able to do that necessarily. Especially you got family, you got young family. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
one thing we talk about with almost every guest on this show is map scouting. My favorite map scouting tool is LiDAR. If you're unfamiliar, LiDAR is basically like a 3D scan of the Earth's surface. I like to say it kind of takes away all the surprises. LiDAR is now available on Onyx Hunt on their topography map. If you go to your app right now, click on the topography map, you can flip on that LiDAR feature and boom, it's going to come on and you're going to see what I'm talking about. The LiDAR is going to allow you to see things that are normally hidden from view. This might be ditches, bends in creeks, rocks, old roadbeds. I personally love old roadbeds because deer like to walk them. They're great places to find scrapes. They're great camera locations. And you know, before, an old roadbed or an old logging road might be something that you kind of happen upon while you're out scouting or hunting. Well, now with the LiDAR, before I go into an area, I can turn on that LiDAR and I can see exactly where those roadbeds are. Even old logging roads from the 1930s, you can still see them on there. So that allows me to go straight to those spots and check them out. It's just an incredibly helpful tool, and it's available now on Onyx Hunt. And hey, if you want to get 20% off your Onyx Elite membership, you can use the promo code Southern. Like I said, it's going to save you 20%. Go check out that LiDAR feature. You'll be glad you did. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt.
Y'all have heard me say it a bunch over the years. I love having a diversified freezer. Obviously, we eat a lot of venison around our house, and if I can have some fish in the freezer, maybe some small game, that's even better. But the truth is, I still eat plenty of beef, and I like having really good beef on hand without having to make another trip to the grocery store. That's one of the reasons I've used Omaha Steaks. They help me keep my freezer stocked, and when we decide we want burgers or steaks, I already know I've got the quality meat ready to go. Everything comes individually vacuum sealed, so I can pull out exactly what I need instead of having to thaw a whole pack, just like how I do with my wild game, and it's consistently really good. It's like going to a really nice butcher without having to go to a really nice butcher. One thing I'm really excited to try is their Burger Perfection Flight. So they've got burger made out of all these different cuts like ribeye, filet, New York strip, brisket, and sirloin. And I've had the brisket burgers before and they are excellent. And the cool thing about the Burger Perfection Flight is you can taste the different cuts, the different textures, and kind of get a feel for everything at once. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99 plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. See site for details. If you're traveling to hunt this fall, you need to check out Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone to rent an RV or a camper without owning one. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I wish I knew about this sooner. There's been a couple hunts over these last few years where, you know, depending on where you're going to hunt, there might not be good hotel options. There might not be good rental house options. So, I mean, this is perfect for the traveling hunter. They've got thousands of RVs and campers nationwide available right in your neighborhood. You got multiple ways that you can travel. You can drive it yourself, you can tow it, or you can have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. Outdoorsy also has built-in peace of mind. They've got comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance included. So not only is this a good option to give you a good place to stay even when you're going somewhere pretty remote to go hunting, but it's also often more affordable than hotels, especially if you got a good group of guys going with you. So how it works is you just search and choose an RV that fits your trip and your group size, you book it with confidence, and then you hit the road, whether you're driving, towing, or getting it delivered. And right now, listeners of the Southern Outdoorsman podcast can have all service fees removed from their booking in 2026 with show code OUTDOORSMAN at outdoorsy.com. That's OUTDOORSY.com and use the code OUTDOORSMAN at checkout to remove all service fees. That makes it hard. Moving on. This one's from email. So currently, we just got a new website, everybody. Our old website was archaic and terrible, and I was ashamed of it for years. And we finally fixed it and made it a decent website. So we haven't got a new contact form up on there yet to submit video Q&As. So in the meantime, whatever questions that you have that you want to write in through email, email them to info@thesouthernoutdoorsman.com. Put Q&A in the subject line, and you can attach a video Q&A if you want to do a video Q&A, or you can just write in a question there. So that's how we're going to do it for the time being. Really, you can always write in a question like that because that's kind of our normal email for the company. But we'll see all those emails that come through, and we're working on getting a little, something a little cleaner on the website for that. But this is from JB from the emails. So the property I hunt on is about 20 acres total, and only 5 of it is woods and one big field of alfalfa and clover that was just established this year. Question number one, will the deer start utilizing the field by fall? It was just planted this past spring, and how do I hunt this property carefully without bumping all the deer? I have a sanctuary bedding area that's 2 acres, and it connects to a rut funnel, but I have very heavy neighboring hunting pressure, and I don't want to bump the deer off and ruin my whole season. So how should I go about this situation? Love the podcast and everything you guys do. What do you think?
First off, when I hear sanctuary and 20 acres and it's 2 acres, think about sanctuary, and this is my always thoughts on it, because like Anthony's always had a sanctuary at the farm. But a sanctuary is only as good as your access, because if you have to walk by or your wind is blowing towards that end quote sanctuary area that you do not go into, you're still pressuring it. Just because you don't walk in there, if your scent's going in there, or they are fully aware that you're out there because of how you enter the property or how you exit the property, or if you're driving on equipment, whatever, you're still adding pressure to the said sanctuary. So remind me, though, on the field aspect of what he's talking about. He said that there was a new field that got put in.
Yep. Large field that's alfalfa and clover, and he's wondering if the deer will start using it by fall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably as soon as it sprouts, they're going to start using it.
The second they till it up, they're going to be like going out there curious of what's going out there. That's happened at the club with the cameras you put out on some of those fields we tilled.
Yeah, we put in those fields.
There wasn't nothing even growing yet. And they were coming out there literally every night looking at the freaking tilled up
ground.
Like,
what happened here?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, those little sprouts came up. They're like, sweet, there's clover here.
Yeah, freaking mowing it.
Started hammering it. Deer and turkeys in those fields every single day.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I mean, deer are definitely going to use it, no doubt. And did he say, just clarification, because I kind of zoned out a little bit, was that, is that field on his place or on the neighbor's property?
It's on his place.
It's on, oh yeah.
And so he's got a stand in a rut funnel on the property.
So if it's a rut funnel.
So only 5 acres of the property, it's 20 acres, only 5 acres is woods, 2 acres is a sanctuary.
Oh dude, he's right next to that said sanctuary. That sanctuary is pointless. You should, the whole, my whole thought would be, and I go back to Alan Summerford. Anytime we talk about small properties, I always think of Alan Summerford, who's been on the podcast, talking about keeping the pressure as low as possible until the timing's right, and then be strategic on how you hunt it and how quickly you kill a nice buck off that place. And that's why I always think of a small property. I think that is a perfect example. You know, a little bit of woods on 5 acres of woods. You got three acres of those woods that's on the property, connected to where your stand's at, is the sanctuary. I would make the whole place, just change your mindset of like the whole place is kind of a sanctuary.
Yep.
Have a couple cameras out there. And then when the timing gets right, whatever you think the timing's right, maybe it's a great early season. It doesn't make it, every spot's a great rut property. Okay. But maybe you have a really good pattern early season. You think you can kill one early. Great. But hunt it very efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
But sparsely, so you can be as efficient as possible with the deer being as low pressure as possible. Because he was talking about his neighbors being, you know, they're hunting pretty hard. They're not going to push 30 deer onto 5 acres of woods. Maybe they would. I don't know. That'd be crazy. There ain't going to be nothing left. It'd look like a park in there. They ate everything. But let your neighbors push some deer in your place, put a couple cameras out, and just let it ride for a little bit. And then pick your time, pick your best wind conditions. He's already got a stand set up. And then hunt it when he believes the timing is right, and hunt it efficiently as possible, get it in and out, and just time it. That's my thought. I would not hunt that every day of the season or every opportunity you had. I would try to let it lay, let it get good, and go in there and try to find you some public land to hunt.
Yep.
Try to find you someone else or somewhere else you can hunt in the meanwhile. Because, of course, we want to hunt every single chance we can.
Yep.
I mean, that's, everybody listens to this podcast is probably in that same boat. I want to hunt every chance I get. But that's, you can blow stuff out. And I say that from personal experience, because I had 7 acres, 8 acres, 15 years ago maybe now, that we had that we could hunt And dude, we hunted every freaking chance we could. And I'm telling you, those deer, it was kind of suburban kind of setup, or urban suburbia area, not urban, suburban. And those deer caught on quick, son. Quick. We were idiots. We were trying to hunt with the wind and everything. But dude, you couldn't get the tree. We had picked out this big old water oak. We had a pre-hung stand in that we put up in there, had to put some screw in steps because that tree was gigantic. Dude, them deer pick you out in a heartbeat, and it was hidden. But dude, they got bumped so many times from one of me and my brother hunting that tree that it was nearly impossible to kill a deer. And yep. So we hunted all the time. We were going to school, going to college, and everything. And it was high school and college. And those deer they caught on and made it super tough. But it's like if we would laid off of it and hunt it, like put a couple cameras out or put a camera out and then kind of hunt it strategically, I think it would have been 10 times better, 100 times better.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what I would recommend.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too, is if you had some public land close by you could go hunt to relieve some of the pressure so you don't feel like you have to hunt this place every chance you get, I would definitely recommend doing that. Because, I mean, even with the club, that's what I've been doing these last couple of years since I've been in a hunting club, because for a long time I only hunted public, and then I joined some clubs because they were close to my house. But I still, if I have certain areas I want to hunt on the club and it's just not right, then I'll just go hunt some public ground, or vice versa. If it's more prime time on the public ground that I'm hunting and I don't have the right conditions, I'll go hunt the club. So I'm not like hunting my spots on subpar days, but I'm also not just like throwing away a hunt or whatever if I've got a day to hunt. So yeah, I think that's all.
It's always good to have a few options.
Yeah, put some cameras out there and scout it. See what you find, man.
And it's 5 acres of woods. There ain't much to scout it. You walk that in about 20 minutes, top.
I'd walk that field edge, too, though, all around the field edge.
Yeah,
and look for scrapes on that field edge. Uh-huh. Look for the big trails coming into it. Because you might be able to hunt that field edge and do pretty good, actually.
Did you say what state he's in?
No, not in the email.
Alfalfa. I'm like, where do they plant that at?
I have no idea. Not around here.
I don't even know what alfalfa looks like when it's grown in a field, other than when we went out to Wyoming.
Yeah.
I remember we looked it up. We're like, what is that deer hammering? It was alfalfa. I was like, dude, I ain't never seen that back home.
Yep. All right, moving on. Let's see here. All right, summer scrapes. Here we go. Shelby Singleton says, do you put any scent/attractants on the licking branch or scrape during the summer? We have a camera on a giant community scrape that was used during season and have not had a single deer come to it in a few months now. I'm wondering if adding scent to it will help. They did clear cut the neighbor's property in May, and the scrape is about 200 yards from the property line, so I'm wondering if that changes their pattern. Or do you think it's a seasonal thing where they will use it in the fall, winter, and the activity tapers off in the summer months? So,
what do you say, scrape man? Scrape whisper.
I don't think it would hurt to put an attractant on it at all. That might kind of kickstart it and get them using it. The fact that there's the fresh clear cut over there, it could be that they kind of routed their movement. And they're
it
just
to
not,
me that answers her question a little bit. Fresh clear cut.
I mean, they probably will still use it.
Oh, they're gonna it's gonna use it. I'm just saying, like, if that was an area that was ideal for deer to be bedded in or spend a lot of time, and they cut it, that's gonna change them for a little bit. It's gonna get better. I feel like. Especially that clear cut grows up a little bit. But for right now, like, that doesn't surprise me. There's not a ton of usage.
Yeah, some of the scrapes that I put cameras on in the summertime, the post that I made for all these questions on Circle is a buck that I got using a licking branch earlier this week. Full velvet, just whipping around that licking branch all over the place. And I put that camera out on July 3rd. And between July 3rd and I think he showed up on the 27th, I've had a bachelor group of bucks come through twice. So what is that, like almost a month, about 3.5 weeks or something like that? Had two bachelor groups come in that time, which for me, like, that's kind of what I expect, especially during the summertime. Like, they're not there all the time. Unless you're right on top of where those bucks are really spending a lot of their time, they're just not coming through a lot. So my strategy with it's always been just keep the cameras out on those scrapes. And they'll come by and nose it every once in a while. I'm not trying to get pictures of him every day right now, but if I can just make sure he's alive and see what he looks like, that's kind of what I'm going for.
Get inventory.
Yeah, make sure he's still in the area. So you could go in there. You could try some kind of scent or attractant in the scrape or on the licking branch. You could also go in there and just kick it out with your boot. And I know some people would be like, don't do that. Use a stick.
But fresh dirt smell deer for whatever reason, are very curious on fresh dirt.
Yeah, just kick it out, and they'll probably get to using it. And also, I've seen it where it'll be dead for a while, and if you go in and kick it out, or you pee in it, or whatever, they'll start using it. Like, once one deer starts using it, more deer will start using it. Like, you know, they used to make those little, or I guess they still make them, those scrape drippers, where it's like you put a bunch of pee in it, and it just, like, drips slowly in the scrape. That, I mean, I'm sure those things work, but I've always been like, I don't feel like you really need that, because once the deer start it, they'll keep it going. If it's a good scrape, and it's in a good spot.
Well, they're not peeing in the scrape in the summertime. They're just hitting the looking branch.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you kick out the fresh dirt and you kick out the bottom, you know, the ground on that scrape, it just causes all that new smell, especially like it rains or something, and you get that fresh dirt smell wafting through the air. If you do that and you don't have a deer come and at least investigate, even a doe or something, I'd be a little surprised. Like, that would tell me, like, there's something going on. The deer are just not using that area right now. Because, that fresh dirt is just, I don't know what about that deer are so curious on. Mm-hmm. Like, again, tilled up field, deer coming in there, like, what is going on? They're just looking.
Yep.
And it's like, I know y'all walked through here before, but now they're like, something changed.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're all about it.
Yeah, if they cut it, if they made that clear cut last year and it changes up the movement patterns, you might not find that big, giant scrape right now, because it just hasn't had that much time to be established yet. Like, especially if they cut it late in the year or in the spring or summer or whatever. Yeah, like, if they cut it in May, like, the deer haven't opened up new scrapes yet. So you could go over there and you could try to locate a licking branch. You might find where a licking branch is snapped in the summertime, or find a little bit of hair on one. I've found scrapes doing that before. But honestly, I would go in there and I would kick it out, put some scent in it if you want to, and just leave the camera there. And then as season gets going, start looking around and see if you find something better.
Yeah, pre-orbitals, all I got to say, pre-orbital gland, they like putting that on a licking branch. That's fine, but
I've never tried that.
Yeah, but I think Chris Jones in the circle community, mm-hmm. he talks about that a little bit. There's a couple other guys talk about that. But yeah, I mean, if you want to try to sense, you can do it, but like, it doesn't, I don't think it necessarily helps or hurts, you know, you doing that. I wouldn't necessarily put deer pee in it. You can, just curiosity, let them come in, check it out. But I mean, if they're going to hit the licking branch, they're going to hit that licking branch. Mm-hmm. And it's like, especially like that, I go back to the one you found public land a couple of years ago, where the big eight's at, and you found that licking branch, and it was like, you couldn't even, I don't think you really could tell, like, it wasn't like defined scrape underneath, but the licking branch was hung down. It was green, but it was like yanked down.
Yep.
And you put a camera on it and freaking had bucks all in there throughout the summer and the fall, you know, working the licking branch, walking through there and so on.
I found that in August of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And that, exactly like you're saying, the licking branch, the very end of it was snapped and hanging down at a 90-degree angle, which is a dead giveaway when you're walking through the woods and you're kind of scanning, looking out in front of you, and you see that licking branch is at perfect height and you see one of those twigs hanging straight down, dead giveaway that's a licking branch. And so I walked up to it, and yeah, the ground underneath it wasn't scraped out, but it was freshly broken. The leaves on the end of the broken part were still green, and there was a hair stuck to it. And so I knew it was a deer that did it. Put the camera there, and that camera is still there. I go change the batteries in it like twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I've had a really nice buck showing up on that this summer. Big 8-point.
Another one?
Yeah. Tall brow tines on him, too.
Tight tines. Tight rack.
No, he's not real tight. He's just outside the ears, and he's just tall tined. Good looking buck. Really nice brow tines on him, though. Way better than any of these deer in here. He's like almost twice the size of that one, which people can't see it. But really
six,
nice brow tones.
Six plus his brow tones?
Yeah, I mean, he's nice.
Okay.
So I'm interested to see what he comes out to. But he's the only buck I've had on that camera this whole summer.
Hmm.
And in years past, I've had a whole bachelor group on that
mm-hmm.
particular scrape, including some really big bucks. And it just changes from year to year. So especially with them cutting and everything, like I said, I would wait till season and then go start looking around in there once they're laying down a little bit more sun. Once they start shedding the velvet, it's going to tell you a lot. Because you can go in there once the velvet comes off and you'll start finding whip rubs. And occasionally you'll find a scrape, but you'll start seeing the trails. And once you get those fresh leaves that fall, it's always like the poplars that fall first. If you got a lot of poplars around, Those will fall in late August. And once those new leaves start falling on the ground, you can really tell where those active trails are because they'll start chopping up those leaves. So go look for that once we get a little bit closer to season. But I wouldn't be so eager to move that camera. All right. Next up, we got Zach White. He's calling me out here. He said, hot take, Andrew Maxwell needs to never drink Starbucks coffee again, as Starbucks are very anti-gun and anti-hunting. I don't know when he saw me drinking Starbucks coffee.
Oh, dude, you're a big Starbucks drinker.
No, I'm not.
I was like, that is accurate. Zach, I'm glad you brought that up.
Nah.
I mean,
I don't like Starbucks to begin with, because I drink my coffee black, and their black coffee is very bad. It's very, very bad. But I agree. There's better coffee companies to buy coffee from if you're, you know, in our community. All right. This is from Brandon Colley. He said, hot take, mountain and big ag land deer taste much better than swamp deer. What's your take on that?
So, to me, mountain and big ag, that is so different sides of the spectrum. I've heard the ag deer taste real good. Also, they're eating GOM corn, so it's a GOM deer at that point.
GMO?
GMO. You know what I'm saying. GMO. GOM.
One of them GOM deer.
GOM deer.
Not,
deer.
Not organic.
Yeah. I had, there was something, it might have been on Meteor. Talked about, like, someone had tested deer meat from, it was like Iowa or Illinois, like heartland of ag country. And, like, so that somehow they saw, like, they could find traces of, like, not just the herbicides, but, like, all the, like, they had some kind of grading scale of, like, the quality of meat, and it was degraded from what they were eating with all the ag. Tastes good.
Yep.
Supposedly. But, anyways, wasn't eating native vegetation all that much. So, but tastes better. So mountain deer and ag deer tasting better than swamp deer. I'm trying to think.
I don't know. I don't know if I've really noticed that much of a difference.
To be honest, every deer I've eaten, I haven't noticed a difference. I just like deer meat. So I haven't. The only deer species, whatever, which we're not talking about whitetails at this point, that tasted vastly different from whitetail was mule deer when we killed our mule deer.
Yes.
It was good, but it was different.
Yes.
Because it was like, it smelled like sage.
Yes, it did.
And
kinda, the people out in Wyoming were talking about how they didn't like to eat them.
Yeah. They're tired of sage. You know, down here, everybody uses it for seasoning. Out there, their meat comes pre-seasoned because that's what they're eating.
Yeah.
So I have not noticed one way or the other. And I've had guys, again, that tell me, oh, big mature buck doesn't taste as good as a doe. I'm like, dude, they all eat. I truly don't pay attention to, like, a tenderness. Like, when I process a deer, it just all goes in the freezer. I just pick out a pack. All I have is dates on it. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'll say, like, buck or doe, whatever, and sometimes, like, a date of, like, when I shot it. And I haven't noticed one way or the other where, like, oh, this is, like, tremendously better. And I have had fawns before, nearlings, okay? Very tender, but almost, like, no flavor at all to the meat.
Right.
Some people might like, I don't know, they just season it with whatever. And it's like veal, I guess. But I don't know. It's an interesting take.
Yeah, I don't know if I've really eaten enough from ag areas to tell a difference.
It's like swamp areas. How many are you killing in a swamp?
I'm a couple. I mean, because where we hunted with Dempsey last year,
mm-hmm.
quite a few deer from that place.
Nah, that's not. I wouldn't really call it. It ain't big enough. I'm thinking. When I think of swamp, I'm thinking like an area like they ain't leaving the swamp. There's like little pockets of it there, but it's like they ain't all just in, like living in the swamp. They're up in the hills. They're everywhere. That's my thought. So,
I don't know what in the swamp would make them taste bad though.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Muddy tasting.
Way to throw a curveball. What's the name? What was his name again?
Bradley.
Bradley, way to throw a curveball. I have no idea how to answer that. I've heard guys talk about like killing ag deer tastes so much better. Like I've killed deer in Iowa, and did not know a difference other than the amount of meat more I got off that buck than I did from one back in Alabama of it tasting different. So
yeah. All right, we're gonna end it with a fun one. This is from Jake Hollinsworth. He said, "Fun question: if presented the chance, all expenses paid, are you guys hunting elk, moose, African wildlife, or some other off-the-wall thing? All expenses paid dream hunt. What would you do?"
You know, I've thought a lot about this. when I read that question, I was like, I really got to put some thought into it. Mine would probably be just because of the price of the hunt. It's very hard to do, like hard to get a tag for. Probably a desert bighorn sheep, or maybe a Yukon moose. That'd probably be it. So, yeah, probably one of those two. I would say a polar bear, except you can't bring the hide back, which is so stupid. I don't know if y'all, listen, I was curious. After we went to the SCI convention like three or four years ago, they had like people there booking polar bear hunts, and it's crazy amount of money. Crazy amount, like six figures. Like you can find one less six figures, but it's a lot of money, And then I come to find out, like, you can't even import, you can't bring the hide back, and you can't have it, like, actually mounted. You have to do a replica. I'm like, that's so dumb. That's terrible.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, probably desert bighorn sheep or Yukon moose. Probably it.
I've always said my dream hunt, and it's still my dream hunt, is Appalachian elk. Like, hunting them in Kentucky.
Or North Carolina.
Yeah, North Carolina. I think they do, like, two tags or something, though. But, you know. Tell me
there's a chance.
Hey, we're still pretty young, dude. We got a long runway. Hopefully they keep, you know, upping the tag allocation or whatever over the next couple of years. But, man, I just love to hunt elk in the East. That would be so epic. Never been really that interested in Africa, like, at all. Probably because I don't make that kind of money.
Well, that's why I said expenses paid and everything. But, like,
if someone was paying for it, it would be cool to experience.
Hey, I did find out from someone who hunts Africa, something you don't know, buddy I go visit every now and then, getting work done on some guns. Anyways, he hunts Africa. He hunts Africa at least once a year, and he's been doing it for like 7 years now. And he met a guy over there in South Africa that actually raises rhinos. For some of those operations, he's got, like, I forgot how many head. It was a lot of rhinos. I'm like, I didn't realize, because I can't remember which one's the one that's, like, critically, like, on the verge.
White rhino?
I don't know if it's white rhino, black. Anyway, but he's got a bunch of one of the rhinos, one of the two species, and he raises them, and they sell them to facilities down there that they run hunts on.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's it.
They shoot domestic rhinos.
And he was talking about... the guy's like ex-military from some other country, not in the country that he lives and operates his business in. And he has a security team that he spends tens of thousands of dollars a week on, like anti-poaching unit. And this is an expansive piece of property, than either county that we live in.
Kind of
big property. And yeah, he's got like his own personal, almost like a, sounds like a militia of guys out there and they just keep rolling. He was telling me stories about it. I'm like, that's intense, dude. But anyways, yeah, no, for me, it wouldn't be Africa. It'd be bighorn sheep or Yukon moose. Cause the elk, the thing about elk, cause I'm thinking of stuff that's like hard to get tags for. Like, you can go do a Yukon moose, this is real expensive. But the bighorn sheep's just super hard to get a tag for, and or it's a super expensive hunt. But it'd be cool.
So, yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I guess the thing about Africa that would be kind of cool is just how different it is. Mm-hmm. And also you hear a lot about trackers over there and how skilled they are. Mm-hmm. It would be cool to get with a good one and watch how those guys work.
So I was telling someone about this yesterday. Actually, listen to the podcast. He's one of my neighbors. He came over. We were hanging out for a little bit. And we got talking about, I think we actually were talking about Africa for some reason. And I was talking about this guy I was mentioned just briefly about the rhinos. He was over there when he was out there last year. The guy, the outfit or whatever they call him that he hunts with over there, they're in South Africa. Ryland Rose, he was trying to get a jackal. It was something that he wanted. And they were riding roads, and they were setting bait sites for jackals. And the PH professional hunter, their guide, just driving in his right-hand drive Land Cruiser, just kind of like looking out the window as it's going. He's like, he's going like 15, 20 miles an hour. And all of a sudden hit the brakes and then rolled back. And he's like, we've been driving for like 4 hours on this place. And rolled back. He said, yep, got a jackal here. And he's like, what? And he hopped out and looked. He's like, it was just like different tracks. And he's like, do you see anything that looks like a dog track, whatever? I'm like, no, I don't see any. Like, I have no. He showed me the photo of what the guy saw while he was driving. And it's like all sand, dust. And he's like, yeah, that's it right there. And he ended up finding some other ones that were a little cleaner tracks later off. But he caught it while he was driving down the road with all kinds of tracks. Oh, just like, looked and saw it.
Dude, like, that's what I want to do. I want to go and, yeah, that would be cool to be with a guy like that.
That's why we were talking. On that note, I found on Facebook, one of the coolest pages I follow is some guy out of, I don't know what country in Africa he's in, but he runs a professional hunter's guide school mm-hmm. for anyone's trying to get hired as a professional hunter. And it's men, women, everything. And it's like the skill sets that they have to learn in order to graduate, get their license to then, or permit, whatever, to then get hired. And watching them do shooting operations and drills with their big bore bolt actions on dangerous game, and it's not real animals, but targets that are like moving targets going like 35-40 miles an hour at you, like charging lions and stuff. Dude, it's intense. Whoa. And boy, these good old boys can work a bolt action faster than anybody I've ever seen, bro. And it's like minimum they're shooting 375 Rugers and all the way up to 500 Nitro. But it's insane watching their shooting drills. I'm like, this is unbelievable. All iron sights and everything. Anyway, it's pretty cool to watch them do that.
Yeah. Yeah, right now I'm listening to a book actually about hunting Africa. It's mm-hmm. called, a lot of people know about this book. It's a classic. But it's The Green Hills of Africa mm-hmm. by Ernest Hemingway. And it's cool. It's very cool. I was like, I could see why people are attracted to this. Mm-hmm. But again, for me, it's always just been like, it's super expensive to go hunt there. I know there's cheaper ways you can do it, but the way that you typically read about it, it is like, I can't even imagine how much that costs to go do that.
This guy was talking about, he's like, it's not that expensive. Like, you can go for like $3,500,
mm-hmm.
but he's like, it's the logistics of getting there. Plane flight's expensive.
Yep.
But then if you want to bring anything back, it is unbelievably expensive for tax, because it has to be fully mounted taxidermy to come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can't bring back any kind of hides. It has to be, if it's a hide, it's going to be a fully tanned hide, I mm-hmm. believe is how the rule works. You can't have a raw hide come back. Or it's going to be full done taxidermy to come back to the States.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's still waiting on stuff from last summer to come back. I'm like, yeah, that's intense. But again, it's something maybe at some point, but that's not like a dream hunt. Like, yeah. At all. It, again, be like what I mentioned.
I'd like to do it one day, but like not. I'm not really that interested in it yet.
No.
Maybe one day.
The whole, I'm telling you, moose is so cool.
Yeah.
So good. I've
started buying points. I'll probably draw it when my kids are out of college.
Or when your kids have kids, when you're a grandfather, you draw it.
Probably. You can get some cow tags relatively quick. I don't care. I'll go shoot a cow. I just want that meat haul, son. So, anyways, yeah, moose would be fun. That would be very cool. But still, man, I just like every year I put in for that Kentucky elk hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't got it yet.
Yeah.
But man, I would love to go do that. That's just so cool.
I'm knowing two guys or three guys who've drawn the Arkansas elk tag, Jonathan Moreland being one of them. But when I was in school up there, one of my classmates, actually he was younger than me, he drew a tag for Arkansas elk and killed one. And I thought that was so freaking cool. And we drive up there and we go look at them. Because, like, you can drive through there. Some of it's on public land. A lot of it's on private land where they're at. And it's the, what is it? The Buffalo River Valley system is, like, where they're all mm-hmm. located. And go through there, like, legit in, like, mid-September and watching bulls fight and throw freaking grass and sod, like, 30 feet in the air as they're going at it is ridiculous.
That's cool.
Like, you hear them bugle and everything, which I remember when I first heard them bugle when we were up there, but like watching them fight was insane. And like, they're like 200 yards from you, you're sitting on the side of the road, and you hear the commotion of them like truly running to each other and then pushing each other, like literally trying to kill each other.
Yep.
It's intense.
Yeah. Yeah. When they first started doing the Eastern elk hunts, I was interested in it. And then Meat Eater did an episode where Rinella was hunting in Kentucky. And it's called like Boone and Bugles or something. I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube now.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I watched that years ago and I was like, I have to do that one day. And one thing he talked about in there that is just so cool to me, where it's like, we've hunted out west before. And when you're out west, there's not like the sounds that you hear out east. Like, we got all kinds of sounds out here, especially when it's warm out, the bugs, the birds and everything like that. And he was talking about how different it is being a Western elk guy and then coming over here, and he's like, man, there's like cicadas and elk bugling at the same time. It's crazy. And like that, dude, I don't know why that just, that trips my trigger. I want to go do it so bad. So maybe one day I'll draw it. Odds are eventually I'm going to draw it, but it's going to take me a really long time probably.
Oh, I'll tell you one other cool hunt that would be, it's not a bucket list hunt, but it'd be a really cool hunt. By the way, leave your comments down below, especially on YouTube, of like what one of your bucket hunts are, like answer the same question, you know, all expense paid trip, but would be hunting whitetails in either Switzerland or Finland.
Oh, yeah.
I think would be really cool because come to find out they got they brought whitetails over. I don't know when, but they have them over there. And we've actually had a listener on the podcast on YouTube ride in from, I think, Switzerland, talking about like he's a whitetail hunter out there. And I think he might have said they brought him in from Canada or something like that. But it'd just be different. It'd be cool. I don't know.
Yep. Just
hunting whitetails on a completely different continent, but same as back home, surviving some rough winters. I don't know. That'd be just pretty interesting.
You know, it'd be another fun one.
What?
It would be like Argentina dove.
Hell yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
It's not a big game hunt, but still, every time I see one of those, I'm like, gosh, that looks fun.
It looks fun, but it also looks like, see, this is the frustrating thing. And I've talked to guys who've done those hunts. You don't get to bring the meat back. Or at least they don't ever talk about it. They just kind of like give it to like some of the, like take it to a village or small town or whatever and give it away and then eat some of it. If I did that, I'm figuring out how to ship back some dove breasts. Okay?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm spending $5,000 on ammo shooting, bro, I'm bringing some dove home, son. We're going to have a deep freeze full of dove. We're going to have dove poppers for life. Okay? But yeah, it looks like one of those things. It looks like it'd be so fun. I'm sure we've had audience members do something like that. But also, I feel like you probably get a little... Yeah, if you did for like 3 days, like I might be outraged. Maybe they did for 2 days, whatever. Because I've never really looked into that hard. But like, say you did for like 3 or 4 days. First off, you got to be so sore just from shooting that many shells through a shotgun. But also, I feel like at some point, you probably get really good at wing shooting. Yeah. But also, I feel like... You're just like, okay, here's another volley of 500 that come flying in. And it's like, okay, now what? I don't know. It'd be interesting. Like, it'd be interesting to do an interview with somebody before they do that trip. And then once they get back from that trip, they're like, what's your thoughts on dove hunting now?
Yeah.
Because it might ruin you for, like,
oh, that's here. Good. Hey, that's
like, it might, like, take the fun out of it. I don't know. Like, I just wonder. So.
I don't know, man. Good point. But that's all we got for this one. You got anything else?
No. Appreciate everybody again watching the podcast, listening to the show. And appreciate everybody that's been joining Circle. Again, if you are curious at all about joining Circle, join us on one of these Hunter Hangout meetings, leaving us comments, make some posts in there as well. You can check out the link down in the show notes of the podcast description on audio or on the video side on YouTube. There's a link there to join Circle. Click it. Come join. Come hang out with us. And until next time, guys, we appreciate y'all watching. Thank y'all for listening. We'll catch you back here on the next episode from the Southern Outdoorsman. And remember, y'all stay Southern.
Around here, fall plots usually go into the ground around the beginning of September, which means right now is when decisions get made. And Whitetail Hill is who I would call before making those decisions. Like, literally call them. That's one thing that we love about working with Whitetail Hill is you can get a real person on the phone by call or text who will look at your situation, your soil, your shade, your goals, and tell you exactly which blend to plant and how to plant it. If it's the first plot you've ever put in, they'll walk you through the whole thing before and after the sale. And the seed they'll set you up with is good stuff. It's premium germination tested blends with zero filler. And their seed blends are built in Alabama, so you know it's going to handle southern conditions. So don't guess your way through another planting season. Go to whitetailhill.com/southern and use the code Southern for 10% off. And if you're not sure what to plant, ask them. Again, that's whitetailhill.com/southern and use that code Southern for 10% off.
If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. Is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo lets you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes, or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.